Calling all lovers of mystery and fans of a good story. If you haven't already heard me talk about June's journey, you're in for a treat. It's time to don your detective hat in this free hidden object mobile game that delves into the captivating journey of June Parker, a self-proclaimed detective on a quest to unravel the mystery surrounding her sister's untimely death. In June's journey, you get to play as June, deciphering clues and unveiling secret plots within thousands of beautifully illustrated scenes. And did I mention it's set in the glitzy 1920s? New chapters are added weekly, so you will never run out of new thrills to uncover, and you can also personalize and decorate your very own Orchid Island where the story takes place. How sharp are your detective skills? Find out when you download June's Journey on your Android or iOS device, or play online via Facebook Games. Your detective journey awaits. I'm someone who loves trying out different makeup looks, but doesn't really wear much on a daily basis, so I like to focus on making sure I have high quality staples. And whether you like a fresh face, full glam, or somewhere in between, you've probably seen Thrive Cosmetics Viral Tubing Mascara. I've certainly seen it everywhere. You know the one in the turquoise tube? So that mascara, along with all of Thrive Cosmetics' beauty products, are certified 100% vegan and cruelty-free, which I look for in makeup, and they've got excellent quality to match. And something I didn't know from all the mascara videos I've seen is that for every product sold, Thrive Cosmetics donates either that same product, another product that is needed more, or a monetary donation. They've worked with over 500 nonprofits to help with a wide range of causes like supporting cancer survivors, people experiencing homelessness, education access, and so much more. Knowing that makes me feel even better about using their products. And I do enjoy using them. Like I said, I like having high quality staples, and so my favorites are products that are multi-purpose, like the Brilliant Eye Brightener. It comes in a bunch of colors, and I like using them as eyeliner, eyeshadow, and even highlighter. Thrive Cosmetics is luxury beauty that gives back. Right now, you can get an exclusive 20% off your first order at thrivecosmetics.com/thrive. That's Thrive Cosmetics, CAUSEMETICS.com/thrive for 20% off your first order.
Hello, world, and welcome back to another episode of Thanks for Coming In. I'm your host, Jillian Clare. I am sorry that there was no episode last week. It was not really intentional, and then it got to that point where it was like, oh, if I'm going to have an episode this week, I need to record somebody now. And I just didn't. So I'm sorry. But it was nice to take a week off. I think everybody needs that once in a while. And hey, you might have seen that we have new artwork. We went through a rebrand. Why can't I talk today? Anyway, I'm very excited about how the podcast looks right now. You know, after almost 2 years, it was one of those things where I was like, maybe it's time to try something new, something that pops. And I want to take this moment to thank my friend Jesse, who helped me with the new artwork. Without her brilliant graphic design mind, it would probably look really bad. So thank you, Jesse. And yeah, I hope you guys like the new art. I kind of am like in love with it a little bit. Graphic design stuff makes me very happy. So I like it, and I hope you like it too. Anywho, let's get on with the show. Today I have Ben Giroux. You may know him as the toddler on Henry Danger or Danger Force. He has a brand new series called Big Nate that is premiering on Paramount Plus on February 17th, and I'm very excited to watch it. And Ben is such a cool dude, and we had a great time talking. So here's that conversation with Ben Giroux. And welcome to the show, Ben.
What's up? How are you?
I'm good. I love talking to, we were just talking about this before I started the episode, I love talking to voice over actors because you have such a good setup and you have such a good like radio voice, and it's like so, it's so appealing to listen to.
Thank you. It's, you know, it's I'm talking to you from my home voiceover studio. We, you know, all voice actors sort of had a voiceover setup prior to the pandemic. But when March 2020 hit, we all basically said, hey, we have to be able to broadcast from home. So the setup has significantly improved.
Okay, question about that, because I've always wondered, did you just like get rid of everything that was in your closet, or like what was that process for you?
Yeah, so initially, so I actually booked the animated show that we're going to talk about today the first week of the pandemic. And so our sessions are typically about 4 hours, and we started really diving into most of our original records with Nickelodeon summer of 2020. And so I was at the time in a place that did not have central air, and I had a much smaller sort of closet set up, and there were a few times that I nearly passed out from the heat. Truly, and me and the other actors were talking about it. I was like, yeah, I didn't want to say anything there, but I definitely started getting tunnel vision towards the end of our session.
Oh my gosh.
In answer to your question, I have since purchased a home that I'm very happy to be a homeowner now, and I live in a different place. And my first task was to build out a home voiceover studio. And the very first thing I did was work with a contractor to put in an air duct.
That's a good move.
Which has
That's
been
a good move.
Bliss, absolute bliss, being able to have some airflow in here.
I mean, yeah, I get hot just closing the door to my office to record this. So I can't imagine being in a tiny little closet and trying to record for hours.
It's, you know, and this is actually nice because this is a, you know, this is probably like an 8x5 room. So it's not small that the sound is boxy. Like it definitely, and I give a lot of credit to our Nickelodeon engineers, one of which named Ryan Green, who came over and really helped me sort of lock in and get this place set up.
Amazing.
It's not cheap, but it's definitely a great at home, setup now.
Okay, so take me back. We're going to get to, the big stuff that you have going on. But I'd love to know how you got started in this crazy industry. What was the thing that made you want to be an actor? And, I mean, you're doing other things, too. So how did you start?
Sure. Yeah, no, it's a great question. I grew up as, a ham trying to, get laughs in our home videos, with my little sister. I would say, I did this sort of traditional thing where I went to film school my first year of college. Then I transferred to USC and I did theater school. I feel like you sort of have to go away from what you want to do with your life to realize, no, this is really what I want to do. So, I did acting. I was lucky enough that while I was in college at SC, I booked my first television pilot. It was a Farrelly Brothers show on Fox that unfortunately had a short season due to the original writer's strike in 2007 or 2008, something like that.
Yeah.
But that was, my first acting gig was doing a show with, the guys that did Something About Mary and Dumb and Dumber. And that, I was very lucky. Right after college, I started immediately working primarily as sort of a comedic character actor on television. I did Psych and Bones and House and Anger Management and NCIS. And along the way, I'm a short guy. And so I was playing a lot.
Me and my best
friend
like to say short kings.
There we go. Okay. See, I'll take that. I'll take short king.
Yeah.
But, after you play about 3 or 4 Christmas elves, it's like, I think I want something more for my career. So I was playing a lot of short king roles. And I started to, this was the early days of YouTube, I started to make a lot of my own stuff. Back in the very early days of online content, I was running some popular YouTube channels like Failblog and FML and Fred. And I was using it to sort of build up my own subscriber base on my own YouTube channel. And it got me sort of familiar with working with brands and clients for the first time, ad agencies. Shortly after that, I started my own production company called Small Red Cape. So now it's sort of grown to the point where I direct and produce, commercials and music videos and TV pilots.
Wow.
But, sort of at the beginning of it, though, I really wanted to make hip hop comedy music videos. And the thing that really kind of
that is so specific.
It is so specific. It actually started with, again, talking about the short guy thing. I wanted to make a braggadocious sort of Busta Rhymes style music video about being short.
Yes.
And I made a project. I teamed up with a hip hop artist, a buddy of mine named Jensen Reed. And we made a music video called Little Dude Anthem. It did really well. It was, you know, it was me and Tamira Gray from the first season of American Idol, and we had So You Think You Can Dance dancers. It was a really fun project. Got like a million views, and we were like, oh, you know, this was kind of cool. Let's do more like this. So the project that led us to, that really ratcheted my career as a director and a producer to a different level, was called Back to the 90s. Jensen and I both sort of acknowledged that we really liked nostalgia. That was something that we wanted to make a song about. So we made a song, a celebratory music video about the 90s called Back to the 90s. Got 100 million views. We charted on Billboard. We joined the Backstreet Boys in Las Vegas.
What?
And that led to... a bunch of spin-off music videos. You know, I wound up directing a Vanilla Ice music video as a result.
Oh my God.
You know, my writing partner, Arnie Pantoja, and I, who's actually also on my animated series, we were the showrunners of a CW comedy pilot right before the pandemic. So Back to the 90s really led to kind of a new level of content creation for my company and for myself, really behind camera. So suffice it to say, I do a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
and I like it. You know, I think initially after college, I was like, oh, I can't tell anybody I do anything other than, you know, my television acting roles.
Yeah, yeah.
It'll complicate my brand, right?
Mm-hmm.
And now I think the more slashes you can add to your business card, especially in entertainment, the more satisfying a career you can do. At the end of the day, all I want to do is I want to make people laugh. And so...
Yeah. Well, I think you bring up an interesting point there, because I remember when I was, you know, a teenager, a big thing that agents and managers used to push was like, you need a niche. You need to fit in a small box. What is your niche? What is your thing? You can't be anything else but this one thing, so that you book as that thing. But I feel like now we live in this really cool world where it's like everybody is doing everything and it's okay. Yes. And if you're not, then they're like, wait, why aren't you doing this too? And it's like, well, no, I'm getting there.
Yeah. Well, and it's encouraged now. You know, before I think it was kind of frowned on if I, you know, told people, well, hey, I also really want to be a writer and a director. Mm-hmm. It's like, well, hey, you really should focus on your television acting. Now everything's interconnected. So, you know, the thing that I would reference is TikTok is a big piece of what I do. I've got, you know, 4.5 million kids on my TikTok account. I post 2 times a day. And I feel like the content I'm able to create on TikTok, the fan base I'm able to directly create and interact with, informs all my other opportunities. You know, I'm getting directing gigs with ad agencies because I have a TikTok audience. I'm able to, I guess, do my role on my animated show better because I have, you know, improv experience on a set. I feel like I can perform better on camera in, you know, the Nickelodeon show I do, Danger Force, because I know what it's like to be a director behind camera. So all of those things, I think, are interconnected. And I think the more of a mastery you can get over all avenues of entertainment, the more they inform each other.
So smart. I bow down. I want to talk about TikTok a little bit, because I feel like when I initially joined TikTok and I have like no followers, I'm just I have no idea what I'm doing on there. I'm like posting my baking and like that's it. I don't know the thing. But when I joined TikTok, I joined it because the kids that I was directing, they all had TikTok. And I was like, oh, like what's happening here? And now I've gotten to, you know, really start to enjoy watching my TikToks that show up on my For You page and whatnot. But you said you post 2 a day. That seems daunting to me. What is that like, creating all that content constantly?
Yeah. I mean, and so I guess my sort of attitude towards TikTok has adapted. Initially, you know, at the beginning of the pandemic, it was a great way to stay creative and to be experimental with, you know, almost ephemeral content, right? If something flops, you've got something right around the corner that you're going to post that maybe does better. So, you know, the thing I'll sort of initially, I guess, compare it to is like in the 90s when I was running around trying to make little short films with my friends on a mini DV camera and figure out a way to export it to VHS tapes, you were really just sort of making stuff with the people and the props and the things that you had immediately around you. You know, then I build up a production company. I'm used to being on set with 200 people and jib cranes and steady cams and all this great technology and resources. And then COVID really sort of took all of that away initially mm-hmm. and said, okay, now you have got your phone, you've got TikTok, and you've got your living room. And so it really brought me back. Yeah, it brought me back to that spirit of creativity, that sort of young filmmaker of just like, hey, I'm just going to make cool stuff. I'm going to try and make people laugh. I'm going to try and build up an audience. So initially it was that. It was like, it's like a great playground, a sandbox to kind of be creative when we were all in quarantine. Now it's pretty integral to, a lot of the things that I do. So, for example, I've got this Nickelodeon show coming out. My TikTok is a great place to promote clips from the show, help build an audience for it, interact with the fans. You know, I love directly interacting with people and seeing what they like, what they don't. And then, you know, that can make its way into the show. So it's a great promo machine right now. It's also still a great sort of creative sandbox. In terms of the output, you know, I'm the kind of guy that, like that Back to the 90s music video I referenced on YouTube, I spent 2 years on that music video before we put it out. Every frame mattered. Whereas with TikTok, it's the reverse, right? It's like, it's a little messier. It's a little sloppier. And that's what I kind of like. I'm still a filmmaker at heart that wants to, you know, carefully construct every frame of a project that I care deeply about and that we're putting tons of money and resources into. But on the flip side, it's nice to have a place like TikTok where I can just, you know, do something funny real quick, put it online, and get 2 million views on it, in a few hours, and, you know, see what works, see what doesn't. Again, interact in the comment feed. I love the interaction. So it's just a different outlet. It's a different medium for eliciting laughter. I got into this business to make people laugh, and it's just another great tool and way to, you know, allow me and my friends to do that.
Yeah. Well, TikTok is so good for comedy. I mean, I find myself literally in bed at night just doom scrolling and laughing my butt off because I'm just like, what are these? And it's like the most random stuff. I'm like, what are these people doing? How do they come up with this? It's brilliant. I love it.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm. You can shop from anywhere doing pretty much anything. You might shop while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast. And however you shop, we all know and love the thrill of the hunt. But do you also know how to get the thrill of the best deals? Because Rakuten shoppers do. With Rakuten, they get the deals they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Sephora, Nike, and even Expedia if you're looking to get some travel in. And getting cash back doesn't mean you have to miss out on sales because those can just be stacked right on top. It's easy to use and based on a simple idea. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back through PayPal or check. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
You talked a little bit about Danger Forest and Henry Danger, but I'd like to go back to that because, you know, you play such a great role on that show. And I have to know what that audition process was like for that, that character.
So, yeah, for those that don't know, I play a character called the Toddler on Henry Danger and now our spinoff show Danger Force on Nickelodeon. It's insane to say this, but I've been playing this character for almost 10 years now.
That's wild.
He's the main villain on the show. He's an evil man baby. I was in the pilot episode of Henry Danger, and the fact that we're still filming with this character now in the year 2022 is insane. You know, Jace Norman, who played Henry Hart, the main kid on Henry Danger, you know, when we started that pilot, he was, you know, a foot and a half shorter than me. Now he's like, you know, 30 years old and 17 feet tall. So it's definitely, it makes me feel old. No, it, you know, look, I'm a theater kid. I grew up on the stage. I grew up with sort of broad performance style. And so what's been great about being in the on-camera Nickelodeon universe for so long is it's really theater on camera. It's really a broad, you know, it's such a broad character. And, you know, it's also a fun,
it's a fun voice to do.
So I've, you know, and I've made some of my greatest friends playing the Toddler on this silly show. There's a great fan base for it. You know, I've been able to really connect with the Henry Danger fans on TikTok. You know, we were just talking about that. There's certainly a big faction of kids that call themselves members of the Todd Squad on TikTok. So yeah, look, the initial audition for that role was like many auditions I've been on, where it's sort of a grab bag of talented improv actors in a big lobby at Nickelodeon at the time. And, you know, I'm somebody that likes to make a big, wild choice for my audition. It might not be what exactly they're looking for, but it's going to be something that's memorable. And so I thought to myself at the time, okay, he's an evil man baby. He's sort of like this baby gangster. Why don't I combine this sort of high-pitched cartoon voice with a lisp with Christian Bale's Batman?
So it sounds a little something like this.
And those two, the duality of those two voices was a lot of fun. Certainly as a cartoon voice actor as well, it really helped sort of bring that character to life. I think they liked
it. Amazing.
I'm also a, you know, a physical comedian, so certainly the slapstick nature of the role is super fun. So I'm very grateful for it. I've made some really beautiful friendships from that crowd over the years. And it also really strengthened my relationship with Nickelodeon as a studio, which has certainly helped on the animation side as well.
Real quick, I have to know, what do you remember what like the casting director's initial reaction was when you did that first take of like that voice going back and forth?
I do. You know what's so funny is I've auditioned for so many things where it's like, okay, you're going to callback number 7 now for this thing. I auditioned for the Toddler once with one take.
Oh my gosh.
And so apparently, you know, they passed the audition tape around and everybody was pretty hyped up on it. I remember I did a lot of like physical gags in it too. I just sort of went for it in the room. I forget exactly what the sides were, but
yeah.
I actually, you know, that casting department, I went to college with one of the casting directors at Nickelodeon. So we had a personal relationship too. Not that nepotism or anything like that played a role, but certainly having that personal connection helped.
Yeah.
And I think they laughed and they said, well, that's as good as it's going to get. So we're just going to stick with that one take. So it was one of the few things that I've ever really done one take on where I've, you know, you've just landed the role from that one.
Wow. That's incredible. Like absolutely incredible. speaking of Nickelodeon and your great relationship, let's talk a little bit about Big Nate, your new series on Paramount Plus. Tell me everything. Tell me what it's about. Tell me about being Nate. Tell me about how it got started. All of it.
Yeah. So Big Nate originally is a long-running, still going comic strip and series of best-selling books that have been going on since the 90s by the author Lincoln Purse. who is also deeply involved in the television show that we're doing. So, you know, Nate's this precocious, mischievous kid. He's a sixth grade kid. He's got this sort of ragtag band of misfit friends, and they're constantly getting into trouble, or at least he's constantly pulling his friends into trouble and misadventures and hijinks. They go to this very sort of underfunded public school called PS38. And it's gritty, it's grimy, it's definitely from another era. What I love about it, you know, I was talking about my love of nostalgia earlier with my Back to the 90s project. We make use of tons of 80s and 90s songs in the show.
PS38
is outdated, so you'll probably see a rotary phone and like an old lamp and things. You know, I think the animation style is really cool, too. I would highlight that. Ours is a 3D CGI show. And most shows that are designed like that are lit uniformly. It's a very bright, glossy look. Ours is the complete opposite. Ours is lit practically. So you might light a scene by the sun sort of streaming in through a window or, you know, an old light in the corner. That allows you to see sort of the, you know, the texture on character's skin. It's just got this kind of grimier feel because of the nature of the world. So there's definitely a more sophisticated style to the animation. And the performances themselves, I would say, also reflect that. They're more grounded than your typical sort of wacky, loony show. And the format as well, I think, complements that. Most animated shows for kids are little 11-minute segments. We have a full 22-minute show, so it allows us to do A stories, B stories, really pace the comedy, give it room to breathe. The thing that I would say the most about the show that stands out to me is, like, I'm a fan of OG Nicktoons, so I grew up watching Doug and Rugrats and Ren and Stimpy. And
oh my god, Ren and Stimpy was my jam.
Best, right? Thing that stands out to me about those shows is there's an edge to the comedy. There's a bite to it. Adults like it too. And our show really harkens back to that. You know, there's a real edge to the comedy in Big Nate that is sourced right from, you know, the source material, really, the comic strip. And so I think that adults and kids alike are really going to enjoy the show because it's edgy.
Oh, gosh. I'm so excited to watch it now. You have me all pumped up. I guess I have to get Paramount Plus.
Yeah. And I would also say, you know, that one of the things that I've been sort of pointing out to folks is the thing that's so remarkable about this show is we've recorded it exclusively in the pandemic. So no one from the show during the show has ever been in the same room.
Oh, my gosh.
And yet, I think this is the first time anybody's ever done this. We still record as an ensemble remotely. So every week we get on a big Zoom, and through the beauty of technology and a lot of really smart people at Nickelodeon, we have figured out how to record an entire animated show remotely, but still together. And so what that allows us to do, at least for the actors, is to riff off of each other, to improvise, to react to one another's performances. And that allows us to discover these really beautiful moments that are not in the script, that could only be possible if we were acting with each other. And so I'm so grateful for that. And I think it's a really incredible achievement that, you know, this show has exclusively been put together during COVID times, and you'd never know the difference when you're watching it.
That's so crazy that you've just been like in your house making a TV series. Just
isn't that nuts?
So, like, who would have ever thought, you know, 5 years ago, if somebody had said to you, by the way, you're going to be chilling in this house that you now own, and you're going to be making a series full time, just like in your house.
You know, I'm so grateful for it. At the same time, we're all so, you know, in any field, we're all so desperate to return to some level of human connection.
Oh, 100%.
So I guess, you know, one of the things that I hope people of all ages sort of take away from our show, in addition to just laughing and having a good time, It's an escape from the pandemic, right? It's so fun for us every week as actors to dive into PS38 because COVID doesn't exist there. And so my hope for the audience is they're able to sort of escape into the world of PS38 and Big Nate and take a break from the chaos that's happening outside in the real world.
Yes, we all need that. We all need it. Yeah. And we're going to take a quick break to listen to an awesome trailer for a fantastic podcast that y'all should be listening to, and then we'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Ray Hebel.
And I'm Rob Schneider.
And on September 7th, we will be launching our new podcast, This Was a Thing, a podcast that will dive deep into the cultural happenings of yesteryear.
Now, you might know Ray from the most popular girls in school and True TV's Dr. Havoc's Diary.
And you might know Rob from his other podcasts, Behind the Curtain, Broadway's Living Legends, and Gay Card Revoked.
But we know each other from a chance meeting at Sandals Resort in 2002. In between Mai Tais and Beach Cornhole, we discovered we had an affinity for crazy, culturally insignificant things from the past. The things that people wanted to forget, we wanted to remember.
That's right, Rob. Every Tuesday, we are going to serve you a delicious heaping helping of nostalgia with a side of sass. And guac, but the guac will cost you extra. You see, we have searched, scoured, and sought out the greatest cultural happenings from the past few centuries, and we want to share what we learned with you.
We will cover movies. Who's your favorite Batman villain?
I'd say George Clooney's Batnips are probably my favorite Batman villain. Television. Was America ready to see Mike Brady dancing?
Broadway. Yes, they actually did make a musical of Stephen King's Carrie, and yes, there was a song where the cast actually chanted, "Kill the pig."
Oh, wow. Music. Now, why would the Beach Boys' Mike Love say, "Don't fuck with the formula"?
True crime. So apparently Lana Turner confessed to her hairdresser that she killed Johnny Stompanato and that her daughter took the rep. Can you imagine being that hairdresser? "Excuse me, Miss Sweater Girl, what did you say to me? We can set that permanent wave later, Mary. The only thing I want to be a witness to are those split ends."
Fashion.
Suddenly, because of Davy Crockett, raccoon tail soared from 25 cents a pound to $8 a pound. I can't afford that.
So join us on Tuesday, September 7th, when we launch the first season of This Was a Thing, available anywhere you get your podcast.
And to get a jump start on all the nostalgic things we will be covering, head over to our Twitter and Instagram at This Was a Thing Pod or our Facebook at This Was a Thing Podcast and follow us.
This Was a Thing, September 7th. Check us out.
Check you out.
Oh!
Well, on this show, we like to share audition stories, and I know you shared your toddler audition story, but are there others that you would like to share with the audience, listeners?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we had chatted briefly, and you said it's like close calls, like there's some things that stand out to me in my career that were almost, right? Every actor says, well, if I had a career made of the things that I almost got, it would be a totally different career.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like, I was almost a Splinter in the Michael Bay Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle movies. So I remember I got pretty far down the audition line in that. You know, it was high pressure and there was a lot of physicality to the role and, you know, lots of callbacks. That was definitely one that was like an almost that stands out in my brain.
Yeah.
But then I think... You know, you get to the point as an actor where it's just like my entire career is auditioning. It's just job interviews, right? Like
it is.
People back home, you know, I grew up in Phoenix, Arizona. People back home see the wins, you know, however many you get in a year. They don't see the thousands of auditions that you do, you know, that were almost things. So, yeah, that's one that stands out as like, oh, man, that would have been a good one. There's been tons of voice roles over the years where it's like, man, you're in the running for this and it didn't happen. Mm. I think too on jobs that I did get that, you know, kind of got killed for other reasons. So for example, I was doing an on-camera show on Netflix called The Big Show Show right before the pandemic began. And, you know, Netflix was given second seasons to all of their multicam stuff. You know, it was just sort of a foregone conclusion that we were going to get a second season. It was a great family sitcom about the Big Show, a guy, you know, a WWE wrestler who's 7'2 and 400 pounds.
Oh, my goodness.
And I played his nemesis on the show, his daughter's high school gym coach, Coach Fenner. And, you know, I got to – Paul is the Big Show's actual name. And Paul and I got to wrestle a little bit in some of the episodes. They had me in about half the episodes of the season. It was such a wonderful group of people. He was such a sweet guy. it was me and Jaleel White as the other recurring major guest star. It was so fun working with Steve Urkel. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they were talking about, hey, man, we're gonna probably write you in as a very strong recurring or a series regular for season two. So I was really sort of ready for that to happen for most of 2020. And then as soon as the pandemic hit, the show goes away. I was actually on three different on-camera shows March 2020 that all got canceled within like the first 2 weeks.
Ouch. But
I also booked Big Nate that week. So, you know, the entertainment industry giveth and taketh, and you just got to be along for the ride. You can't grieve the losses too much, and you can't celebrate the wins too much. So, I was really bummed when the Big Show went away because it was such a great group of people. We were shooting at the Paramount lot, which is always such a fun,
lovely lot,
fun place to be. On-camera stuff's weird now, right? Like I go and do a Danger Force episode and there's no more communal lunches. You're eating your prison food by yourself in your dressing room and, you know, everybody's got hazmat suits on. And it's like, well, a little of the luster has come off of the acting experience.
Yeah, a little bit. The magic and the show of it all, the glitter has kind of dissipated.
Exactly.
Well, I've had so much fun talking to you, and I'm so excited to see Big Nate. How can people follow you on social media to keep up with all of your TikToks and your fun and your comedy?
Yeah, it's just my name. So check me out on TikTok and Instagram. That's probably where I post most. It's just my name, Ben Giroux, BENGIROUX. And then Big Nate comes out. First episodes drop on Paramount Plus February 17th.
Woo woo! Everybody better be watching. Thank you so much for coming on. It's been so fun.
So great to meet you. Thank you so much.
Thanks again to Ben for coming on the show. Make sure to watch Big Nate premiering on Paramount Plus February 17th. I know I'm going to watch it. I love a good animated series, guys. I think I'm still a kid at heart. I will literally watch animated shows 24/7 if I can. Anyway, thanks, Ben. Tune in next week for another chat with another person that you know from watching them on your television sometimes. And until then, make sure to subscribe to the podcast wherever you're listening to it right now. Leave us some love, please. That would be so great. Some stars. And check us out on Instagram, where I post fun video clips from these interviews every single week. I think that's it. Tell your friends about the show. Tell your family about the show. Thank you all for continuing to listen to me ramble and talk to cool people every week. I really appreciate it. And as always, thanks for coming in.
Nowadays, trends and news cycles change faster than we can blink. But there are some things that withstand the test of time. And if you're looking for a connection to something timeless, and maybe also a glimpse of life at a slower pace, I believe everyone can relate to the very human experiences explored in Jane Austen's novels. And that's where I come in. My name is Alison Larkin. I'm a writer, comedian, and narrator and host of The Jane Austen Podcast with Alison Larkin. I spent a lot of my childhood in the part of England where Jane Austen lived and wrote, and now that I live in the States, nothing gives me a sense of homecoming quite like narrating her books. On this show, you'll listen to award-winning narration. I'll give myself a pat on the back for that, as well as conversations with actors, writers, and other fascinating people who all share a passionate love for Jane Austen. So please, join me as we embark on a wonderful journey through Jane Austen's work. Be sure to listen and subscribe to The Jane Austen Podcast with Alison Larkin, wherever you get your podcasts.